How does it function? It's actually video or?
Yes, there's a video camera underneath that screen, and then there's a rear screen projector there, and then people stand here against this high translucent screen. And that makes it very easy for the computer to see them through the camera, because what the camera sees is silhouette. And then we do some processing to make it absolutely a perfect silhouette. Then the computer, when I say the computer, it's actually a whole rack of equipment with specialized computers that we made just for this purpose. And because this was made many years ago. It was running, as you see it here, 15 years ago. And so at that time, it was something you couldn't do with any standard computer. And a matter of fact, people in computer vision would have said you couldn't do it all, because they were not trying to see fast. And I had simplified the problem of seeing a person by this backlighting. And then I'd chosen to see something nobody else had ever wanted to see, which is the body. You know, there's nobody in research was interested in the human body. But as an artist, the human body was, you know, a long tradition of the human body in artwork, in painting and sculpture. It's all about the body. And so why shouldn't it be about the visitor's body, too? And that was sort of my idea. And so the computer gets the silhouette of the person, and it is, when it gets that, a whole bunch of different old computers chew away at looking for the head, the hands, the fingers, and how far they're moving and where they are on the screen and so on. And then it decides, depending on the interaction, what should be done in this next 30th of a second. In other words, 30 times a second it's making this judgment. And so they're all different kinds of experiments and different kinds of interactions. And I was trying to communicate to people the idea, because you've got to remember, this is so long ago that I started, that it was simply a different world that I was speaking to. That world is gone. I'm here. I don't know, do you know who Paul Revere is in American history? He's the person who rode his horse telling everybody in the colonies that the British were coming. And so I'm sort of like that long after the event. I'm telling people computers are coming and they're here. So yeah, it's not really such a news flash anymore, but I was trying to point out that computers were not purely technical, mathematical, scientific, or frightening. Because everybody thought the computers were something to be scared of. And I had a reason to be concerned, because this was the height of the anti-war period, and I was at a campus that was very active, and I'm working in the computer center. It was a target if anybody ever was going to bomb anything. And instead they bombed the physics building. So I was at the campus where they did the bombing. So I had reason to be a little bit concerned. So this was my defense, you know, my defense of art was trying to persuade people that computers were okay. And the goal was in one 3-minute experience that I would teach people to change their attitude about computers and technology, that it could be just fun, it could be playful. And also that art could be something different. Art could be not just about the brains and the eyes and the mouth. Wow, it's all about the mouth. And and so I wanted to make art that was about the body and what you had trouble talking about. And so one way was, you know, having the computer see the body and have the experience that that you have created by yourself. And that, here, each time, let me show you a little bit how it works. As you step off and then step back in, it's a different interaction. And so this guy is, this little graphic creature is, he was done in 81, But he actually, the idea for them came in 1970.
Could you just explain? There's a little bug on the screen, a little green bug.
We are
seen as big red human beings, and there's this little green bug who crawls on us or jumps
right.
over now.
He is almost identical to the I think it's the Tamagotchi games. And he was shown in Japan actually long before that. But he's basically all you can draw if you have this. He's 16 pixels by 16 pixels, so this is not, you know, super high level graphics, because we built the graphics. At the time we built this, this was high resolution. This was very sophisticated graphics for that time. But of course today it's almost a joke. But that's a help, because since we have so few pixels, only 64,000 on the whole screen, we can do things much faster than you can if you've got a million or a million and a quarter, like the Silicon Graphics do. And so he, in 1970, what I did was I had this idea, and I did what I called the Wizard of Oz interface. I basically faked it. In other words, people went into a room and they had an experience not unlike some of this. They had a projection screen. They saw their images on it. It was black and white then, because we didn't have color in the projectors available. And they would see themselves, and then I was a mile away, and I was using a data tablet. And what I drew on the data tablet was picked up by, displayed on a computer, picked up by a camera, transmitted across campus, combined with the live image of the person, and projected in front of them. So they saw their own image and then graphic graffiti being drawn on them. But when they saw the cursor come towards them, they started treating it like it was alive, and they'd hit it away. And, you know, this was, and so I thought, well, okay. And I started making it look like a creature, and I had a couple of views that with buttons that I could select which view would be chosen next. And what happened was, over a period of 6 weeks, people came in, and I had some ideas that I'd implement, and they had ideas. They'd come back, you know, the same people might come back a week later, because it was open 10 hours a day, 7 days a week for 6 weeks. And so we had thousands of people come in, but it wasn't, there were times a day when it wasn't that busy, and some people would come in and students and work with us. You know, they would have their own, they'd help us invent it. And so that, my medium is not really the computer, it's people. It's what will people react to? What can I get people to do? So we, go ahead.
Yeah, can you get people to be sort of more intimate? I mean, dive into situations that they won't dive into in normal life?
Well, in most people, adults have a very limited range of postures, a limited range of movements, and they don't deviate from that very much. You know, they're really pretty wooden, tin soldiers going around all the time. You watch a child, and the child is bending over and rolling over and standing on their hands, just doing everything they can think of with their body, just to see what it does. And every morning when they get up, it does something new. Wow, that's great. And, of course, with us, it's a little just the opposite. Every morning we wake up and there's one less thing it can do. But with this, we get that childhood experience back, because all of a sudden your body can do something new. And so you're invited to explore, to just do things that you haven't done since you were a kid. Here, let's step off again and now go in, and now we have a visual interaction. And so anybody can create beautiful, flowing colors on the screen with their body. And nothing happens unless you do something with your body. And many of those things are things you wouldn't normally be doing. And so all of a sudden, people who are quite inhibited will be out here doing just extravagant movement. And some, you know, it used to be, we don't see this as often anymore. Some people would watch for 45 minutes before they'd come in. You know, they'd be working up their courage. But now people seem to be, maybe the setting also, and there's differences in different countries. In Japan, some of the people will start more inhibited. But when you urge them to come in, which you might not do someplace else, then they come in and they really are playing like, you know, like anybody else, and they enjoy it quite a bit. And so it's really a different view of art in a lot of ways, because I often think that artists think that their job is to create art history and art criticism, whereas I think we should be creating some pleasurable experiences which are provocative, and certainly when this was conceived and first done, it was pretty provocative because people had never, it's making a lot of radical statements about what art might be and what our world is like. And if you think about it, this is Big Brother. I mean, he's seen us, he sees everything we do, and he responds to everything we do, and we love it. So, you know, how did Big Brother get invented? Well, because we wanted him. You know, this is maybe Big Mother or something, but, you know, it's just intended to... I hear we'll step off, so this guy can do a little bit.
But what is it? Actually, you start to have a relationship with the machine.
That's right. And that relationship, it's a relationship with the machine, it's a relationship with your body, it's a relationship sometimes with other people that are on the screen with you, and there's even a relationship between the people who are doing it and the people watching, you know, because sometimes in some interactions we don't have all of them here. There'll be, like, we have one interaction where my hand appears, and this is actually a telecommunication. My hand from another location comes in, and it's a giant hand on the screen. You know, it's about 6 feet, 2 meters wide. And then from my fingers extended, and hanging down from my finger is a string. On the end of the string is the visitor. They're dangling on the end of the string. Now, if they move back and forth, they make their image swing on the string. And so they start moving back and forth and making themselves swing higher and higher. And so everybody's wondering now, can they swing all the way over the top? And sometimes it takes them 10 minutes to do that. But when they do, their friends all applaud, and it's, you know, it's a little performance. They didn't intend to get into a performance, but that's what happened. So it's all about new relationships, and that the computer is not something that simply, I mean, people always say technology is neutral and so on, but it depends what we do with it. And there's some belief that you know, that we have all these evil instincts, and I actually think that the Western countries have shown very little propensity to do evil. You know, we've actually been pretty responsible in a lot of things, and hopefully this is sort of showing how you might do that. And we've had, for instance, a case where it actually is quite important is we've taken people with cerebral palsy and traumatic brain injury. And we've had them in here, and they interact with, we can focus the camera in on a small part of their body. And so the little boy who's almost completely paralyzed, but he can move one hand a little bit and one finger. Well, he would like that to mean something. He'd like to have his little bit of expression in the world be effective in some way. So he can, the little creature will play with him, he can play sounds with that finger, he can shoot with that finger and draw with that finger a little bit, and that means a lot to him. I mean, when we've gone to the Cerebral Palsy Center out in Long Island in New York State, you know, he would come in a half hour each day, and this was his physical therapy. And we had a number of other people who would come in each day and for 8 hours a day. So the people with restricted movement are, it's hard to motivate them to move their bodies because they don't, the body doesn't do much. On the other hand, if they don't move their bodies, they lose the ability, that limb becomes locked, they can't move it at all. Then if they can't move their arm, they can't breathe. When they can't breathe, they get pneumonia. When they get pneumonia, they die. So they have, you know, so it actually is, while it seems like it's just sort of unimportant exercise, it actually can be life or death for them. And as well as being a lot of pleasure for them. And so we always conceive this as an idea, a new role for the artist, which was to conceive of ideas which had technological and practical implications as well as aesthetic and cultural implications. And so I've done a system using the same technology for blind people. And I put create an invisible map on a tabletop. Camera looks down at their hand. They touch things with their finger. The computer tells them what they're touching. Very simple idea. But it works better for them than the traditional tactile materials. And so that was a big surprise. It works better and they like it better. But when we go back, we'll be picking up work on that again. So that was part of my idea, which very few other artists are interested in, but the idea that the artists would create a technology and show be at the head of the development rather than at the back of it, because a lot of this technology that we're about to create is going to be intimate. It's going to be define our lifestyle, and if it is ugly, we'll have ugly lives. If it's beautiful, you know, if it's like the interface to a musical instrument, then we'll have a pleasure in going about our business. And
I was thinking about something else also. When you in sort of traditional art, when you're standing there looking at a painting, you have a very intimate experience. It's only you and the painting, and the painting doesn't really do anything, it's only in your head. But when we see these, there's just a bunch of men in suits in here,
right,
and they were trying to move. I mean, they're also, maybe they're a bit restricted because somebody else is watching. It's like when you maybe write a letter and somebody is watching over your shoulder.
Well, they were going through in executive mode. I mean, exactly. I have a concept which I call supermarket mode. In other words, people say, "Okay, I'm going to go see 500 works of art in the next hour." Now, are they seeing anything? I don't think so. And so, these executives, had they come in one at a time, they'd have been fine. But they came in as a group. Somebody was instructing them. They have the intention to see everything, so they'll see nothing. And this happens to executives all the time, you know, because they don't allow themselves to just observe. But most business people, and we've certainly had executives in that did it. In other words, if they came on their own, if it wasn't official, these were official VIPs of some kind. They would have been fine, because the only people, oddly, one group of people that will sometimes not do it is young mothers with their children. They want the children to do it rather than them. Now, when grandmothers will push the children out of the side sometimes and want to do it themselves, but the young mother has some idea that, you know, I'm an adult. And the children should do this. But
now you've been working in this field for so many years. It's more than 30 years, I understand?
30 years, yeah.
What do you think of all this interactive and digital art that's being produced these days? I mean, we have had so much during the past 10 years now.
Well, in one sense, I've been sort of, you know, tapping my foot saying, when are we going to get started here for 30 years? At the same time, a lot of what's going on is stuff that, in my own work, for my own purposes, I ruled out for me. In other words, I said, okay, I'm going to be about interactivity with computers. It's going to be as far away from the traditional way of interacting with a computer as possible. And we didn't, you know, have GUI interfaces then. We just had keyboard, and if you were doing graphics, you'd have a data tablet. The mouse didn't exist. And it might have been invented, but there was no product using it. And so I wanted to make it, long before it became the norm, I wanted to get away from the keyboard and the mouse as the interface, because I felt you could only comment on that if you completely divorce the experience from expectations that the person might bring to it. And that would be all the more true today. So there's a lot of work that is working within the interface, and that is something I wouldn't have done. That doesn't mean that wasn't good to do. It's just that by my own rules for me, it is something that I didn't think would work for what I wanted to communicate. I think the issue came up whether interactivity was dead now, which is a very funny idea to me, but somebody had raised that point, and then I was asked a question, and the arts have movements that come and go, and in fact there was another interactive art period before this one, and there the technology was very simple, and it was like a photocell or something detecting your blood, your pulse, and at each level of technology there may be another wave of interactive art, but I think that the interactive possibility will be permanent, because the in the arts, it's a little different than saying in art, because we have this this idea of art as separate from the other arts of performance and dance and theater and music and so on, where it's not clear that they will remain as separate. In other words, if I can, I was talking with one of your colleagues, the woman, about participatory theater that you could do without technology, that you would have a group of actors who have worked out a play minus one character, and so and they've rehearsed this and worked on it, and they may have one person who represents that character, and then the audience of one with this group of actors is then sort of pressed into their role. In other words, they enter into this group and they find out who they are in the play, and they find out what to do. Now, this actually, as well as being sort of a rehearsal for what would you do in virtual reality if you really could do interactive theater, it's very much like my early work where I was the computer, the brains. Here you've got the actors being the brains. But there's also a way that you could use this quite early in the... In Europe, it may not be as much of an issue, but in the U.S., kids smoking is considered just a terrible problem, even though it's getting better all the time. But you could put them into a social situation in which they would have to react and resist the exact kind of pressures that they might be under when at the moment they decide to smoke. And so you might teach them not what to say, not what to know what the right answer is, but to actually do it, and that's very different. And so you would rehearse the statements you would make and the actions you would take. Same with getting into a car with somebody who's drunk. You could say, "No, I'm not going to go." And these people would use all of the things that your friends might use, because in the U.S., kids drinking and driving is epidemic. Always has been. And so every parent does worry about their child getting into that situation. And so you could teach So that there you go from interactivity to theater to practical education in behavioral education.